Xbox.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable, and it is Tuesday, and it's one of my favorite times on our program where we talk about books. It is our book pick segment, and we do this every day, every Tuesday on the show, and just about, I mean, we try to do it every Tuesday. Sometimes, you know, other things get in the way, but we are blessed, absolutely blessed with this incredible team of independent booksellers that are scattered throughout our listening area, and the fact that we can get them all together and come in and present their favorite books with us is just one of the highlights of this show and of my being. Let me introduce our group to you this morning. We welcome Connie Brooks and Heather Boyne from Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York. Hello, friends. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's really good to see you both. We also welcome Amy Zimmerman from Chatham Bookstore in Chatham, New York. Hello. How are you?
I'm great. I'm happy to be here.
It's really nice to have you. I would be remiss if I didn't if I buried the news here. I just want everyone to know, if you haven't heard this yet, but our friends at Battenkill Books, Connie and crew, have been named the Publishers Weekly Bookstore of the Year finalist. Which, how cool is that? So my understanding is
five bookstores.
One of five.
Across the country.
And then they'll figure out at the end. And you were the first one to be announced.
We were the first one to be announced last week. It was a nice bit of good news that we received last week. The overall winner was announced last week as well. So kudos to Source Booksellers in Detroit. They are the bookstore of the year, and I bow down in reverence. I always look at this list every year, and I bow down in reverence to these bookstores.
Yeah.
To be selected has just been an incredible honor.
That's incredible. And it's how did they find out about you? Do you know that?
So the process, as I understand it, is that you are nominated by someone in the industry.
Yeah.
And then it goes to a panel of editors at Publishers Weekly who they vet and they vote and they come up with the finalists. I do know at least one of our nominations came from outside the state of New York. So that's pretty cool.
There you go. Source Books is where?
They're in Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, Source booksellers.
Yeah, they need something.
They need some
good news there.
Yeah,
sure, good for them. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I was so thrilled to see the news, and it's just, it's like, oh, that's my books. Cool. Very, very neat. All right. Well, let's get to the list and hear about all the wonderful books that have come your way. Connie, let you begin.
So I will start with Tilt, which is a debut novel by writer Emma Patti, and I devoured this in two nights flat. It is the story of Annie, who is 37 weeks pregnant, and she's shopping at an IKEA in Portland, Oregon, when the big one hits. And the big one is the long-predicted major earthquake due to hit the Pacific Northwest sometime in the next 50 to 100 years. The story unfolds over the course of one day as Annie sets off on foot across the city in an attempt to reunite with her husband. The trappings of modern civilization collapse shockingly quickly, or perhaps not that shockingly quickly. The cell phone network is out. Roads have buckled. Bridges have collapsed. There's no power. There's no water flowing from the taps. And Annie, along the way, must make excruciating decisions. And as a reader, you can't help but ask yourself what you would do if faced with such impossible choices. It reminded me a bit of the beginning of Station 11, for those who've read that book.
Emily St. John Mandel.
Yes. And there's a joke amongst booksellers right now that almost every single book blurb that we pick up has to use the word propulsive. And I think that in the case of Tilt, it is an apt description. It's a tense and tender story. It seems very of the moment. And you just cannot help but put yourself in Annie's shoes.
Excellent. It is Tilt by Emma Patti.
Patti.
All right. Amy.
Sure. So I thought I would start today with a propulsive new picture book.
See, there you go.
I'm not a regular picture book reader these days, but this book, The Lonely Goose by Leila Nargi, was the star of our first ever story time this past weekend, and I really enjoyed it. It's the timeless tale of two geese who fall in love. We get to witness their exciting courtship and comfortable domesticity. When circumstances eventually change, as they always do, we see how one half of the pair is able to adapt and slowly find her way towards home again. One thing I love about this book is how Nargi pulls out animal traits and behaviors that young humans will recognize. How the geese snuggle and care for one another, how they mourn and feel deeply, while also filling the book with goose-specific facts and habits. In this way, kids can goose identify goose-specific. Young humans can identify with the animals and stretch those empathetic muscles while also learning about an entirely different way of life. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that kids love this book. It's beautifully illustrated by Ann Hunter, who I just learned is a friend of Bat and Kill Books.
She is.
Yeah.
And she was at our Storytime event as well. And she told us that she drafts all of her picture book illustrations by hand, in this case with colored pencils, which was really cool to hear in our AI age. Yes. And we have copies of The Lonely Goose at the Chatham Bookstore now. They're signed. And we also have these exclusive, again, hand-drawn bookmarks from Ann Hunter.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Look at that.
Isn't that lovely?
Oh, that is really neat. Oh,
well, supplies so cool. last.
The Lonely Goose. And who looks especially lonely in that bookmark?
Yes.
Yeah.
Looking off stage to try to find
just
the other goose.
We'll think of the word of the mood of the goose, but I'll come with that.
You'll have to read the book to find out. Right. There's a happy ending. Don't worry.
Good.
Does the mood change?
Excellent. Yes. Does the mood change? Excellent. Heather, go ahead.
All right. First one I'm doing is Cloth, 100 Artists, Contemporary and Heritage Techniques, published by Abrams. So artist, textile designer, and author Lena Corwin highlights the work of 100 talented American fiber artists for all who are inspired by weaving, quilting, dyeing, felting, and other techniques. The book acknowledges the rise of recognizing textile artists into the realm of fine art. Textile art has long been relegated to craft. Western art traditions often dismiss textiles as domestic work associated with women and not real art. It was a view perpetuated by an art world that mostly favored the accomplishments of male artists, not women. Skilled sewers, master weavers, and other fabric enthusiasts have been fighting hard over the past 50 years or more to elevate their work and gain recognition. Cloth 100 Artists is a celebration of this movement. The book gets everything right. Lena includes artists representing a wide spectrum of age, gender, race, and locale. The book includes DIY instructions via 8 projects, or more like explorations, created by the author in collaboration with a contributing artist, so that readers can learn, experiment, and create. It's a beautiful celebration of cloth as a medium. The images and details show the artist's work off to maximum effect. It's a 10 out of 10 and will be at my fingertips as an important resource in my collection of fine art books.
Cloth 100 Artists, Contemporary and Heritage Techniques by Lena Corwin. All right. Connie, you're up.
All right. We go from the Moody Goose to the Gull. So I have Murder at Gull's Nest by Jess Kidd.
Oh, that seems like taking a turn.
Things are definitely taking
Poor
a turn.
Yeah.
Pardon the bird pun in that as well. A turn, but go ahead.
Jess Kidd is a remarkable writer, and you may know her as the author of The Night Ship and Things in Jars, among her other books. Her newest one, Murder at Gull's Nest, is a departure for her in that it's what is best described as a cozy mystery. I use the descriptive cozy to describe mysteries where there isn't a lot of blood and violence, and the murder has usually taken place offstage. The Murder at Gull's Nest is set in the seaside town of Gore-on-Sea in Kent in the British countryside. Gull's Nest is a boarding house a bit down at the heels, and it's where we find our protagonist, the former nun, Nora Breen, who is determined to solve the mystery of her missing friend, Frida. Frida's last known residence was Gull's Nest, when her letters to Nora abruptly stopped. everyone at Gull's Nest, from the taciturn housekeeper to the daughter of the proprietor to the cast of characters who make up the fellow guests, all seem to have a secret they are determined to conceal. There are plenty of twists and turns ahead of you in this thoroughly enjoyable mystery, though you may not rush to book a stay at Gull's Nest anytime soon.
There you go. All right. The name again of the book is Murder at Gull's Nest by Jess Kidd. Amy.
So next up, I am recommending The Wilderness by Aishagul Savas. My sister, who I love very much, is about to have her first child. So like any reader, when confronted with something new, I went looking for books to help me. And I was so excited to find this one. It's part of a gorgeous series from the publisher Transit Books called Undelivered Lectures. Each title is a slim, elegant little work of nonfiction from writers including Namwali Sirpal and Kate Zambrino. Usually, Aishagul Savas writes precise, gem-like novels that are chock-full of perfect sentences. In this book, she unleashes those talents on the wilderness of her postpartum experience. What Savas is trying to tame here, to comprehend, is how childbirth can be so mundane, literally something that happens every day, but also otherworldly and meteoric. To help guide her through this new life, a foreign land that contains its fair share of darkness, Savas brings in other voices, quotes, and teachings to light her way. These range from texts from friends to scholarly passages to fairy tales and cultural lore. This chorus attempts to illuminate an experience that can feel both inarticulable and extremely isolating. Lost in the wilderness, these texts are Savas's dearest companions. To give you an example, the book repeatedly references the autobiographical account of an anthropologist who was horribly maimed in a bear attack. "I want to go back to it," Savas writes of that remembered text, feeling that it describes perfectly what has happened to me. "I have encountered another being, and I have been torn apart. I am trying to put myself together, not sure how the pieces will fit back in."
Wow.
Wow.
The name of the, I think you took the wind out of the room.
Thanks, guys.
The Wilderness is the name of the book. All right. Thank you, Amy. Heather.
All right. The Book of Alchemy, A Creative Practice for an Inspired Life by Suleika Jawad. To describe this book, first I need to talk about Suleika. She's a force of nature, creativity personified. She wrote the New York Times column and Emmy Award-winning video series Life Interrupted, where she documented her experience as a young adult with leukemia. The column inspired her memoir of Between Two Kingdoms, a New York Times best-selling book. She is also the subject, along with her husband Jean-Baptiste, of the Oscar-nominated and Grammy Award-winning documentary American Symphony, a portrait of two artists during a year of extreme highs and lows. She's also the creator of Isolation Journals, a weekly newsletter and global community that harnesses creativity as a tool to navigate what she calls life's interruptions. And if that is not enough, she is also a large-scale watercolor artist. This inspiring author invites us to explore the art of journaling. Now, this is really sounds like it's common, but it's the method that she uses and many other people use to navigate the challenges of modern life. More profoundly, how journaling can be a life-altering practice to help us tap into creativity, something she seemingly has in abundance. Whatever she's doing it right. In this book, she has gathered the wisdom from 100 writers, artists, and thinkers in the form of essays with writing prompts. Every journaler can find their muse. Brief biographies in the back allow you to go even deeper into their stories. You'll find it on the bookstore shelves this week. It's a quality Random House production. You cannot miss it in the bright marble paper dust cover. And when you take off that dust cover, you will see that they have created a journal-inspired cover art.
The Book of Alchemy. All right. Connie.
So I switched to some nonfiction for my last two picks today, and I start with Custodians of Wonder, Ancient Customs, Profound Traditions, and the Last People Keeping Them Alive by Elliot Stein. Stein is a journalist and editor at BBC Travel, and he scoured the globe to find the individuals profiled in his book. Custodians of Wonder takes a look at 10 astonishing people who are maintaining some of the world's oldest and rarest cultural traditions. Stein introduces us to a man saving the secret ingredient in Japan's 700-year-old original soy sauce recipe. In Italy, he learns how to make the world's rarest pasta from one of the only women alive who knows how to make it. In Britain, he meets a beekeeper who maintains a very old tradition of telling the bees the important news of the day. In West Africa, he meets a 27th generation griot or storyteller, and in Germany, a mailman for the only tree in the world with its own address. It's a delightful book, and it will make you believe in humanity again.
Well, that's cool. tall order, but sure.
Tall order.
Yeah. All right, and that's Custodians of Wonder. All right, Amy.
Next up, I have a very grown-up book for anyone who has struggled to grow out of their teenage obsessions. As someone who read the Twilight series a redacted number of times, I can definitely relate to Alex Lawson, the protagonist of Fan Service, a new paranormal rom-com from author Rosie Dannon. When Alex was a teenager, she ran the online archive for a fictional werewolf detective show called The Arcane Files. Basically, she devoted a large portion of her life to a pretty bad TV show targeted at horny teenagers.
Teen Wolf.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
All right.
TM, but yeah. When we meet Alex, she's more or less moved on from her adolescent obsession. Little does she know that that chapter is about to be reopened in a big way when the washed-up star of her favorite TV show begins experiencing real-life werewolf symptoms. Naturally, the C-list actor in question, Devin Ashwood, reaches out to Alex, the foremost Arcane Files scholar, in an effort to understand why he's suddenly living out the series. This book is delightfully tongue-in-cheek. It knows that paranormal romances are absurd and totally leans into that. Case in point, Devin isn't turning into any old werewolf. He's turning into the cheesy, low-budget, sexy idea of a werewolf that he played on TV. So naturally, Alex looks to the lore of the show to try and help him, and they reenact made-for-TV strength trials and werewolf tests to hilarious and sexy results. Alex and Devin are a perfect black cat golden retriever pairing. She's a totally sincere nerd, protecting herself beneath an icy exterior, and he's an out-of-work actor getting by on his good looks and charm. Given the absolute absurdity of their predicament, neither of these characters take themselves too seriously, so the book's hidden emotional heft will really sneak up on you. The heart of this novel, for me, isn't Alex and Devin's romantic relationship. It's Alex's relationship to the Arcane Files, which makes her a stand-in for fans everywhere. Anyone who has formed their identity or found their tribe through devotion to media properties that don't always love them back. Of course, in Alex's case, she really does get to fall in love with the heartthrob slash werewolf of her teenage dreams. And I promise you will have so much fun living vicariously through her.
Fan Service is the name of the book by Rosie Dannon. All right. That brings up Heather.
Hi. All right. My next book, Jane Austen's Bookshelf, A Rare Book Collector's Quest to Find the Women Writers Who Shaped a Legend by Rebecca Romney. It's published by Mary Sue Rucci Books. Rebecca Romney is a rare book dealer. She was featured in a documentary called The Booksellers and is widely known to the TV world for being on Pawn Stars as their rare book specialist. She also wrote Printer's Error, Irreverent Stories from the Book History, and the romance novel in English, A Survey of Rare Books. She's also a devoted fan to Jane Austen. Fans of Austen know that she only wrote 6 novels, 7 if you include Lady Susan. When you get to the end, you start back at the beginning. Jane's use of social commentary, realism, wit, and irony have earned her acclaim by legions of fans. But Rebecca wanted to know, who was Jane reading? This was a time of great experimentation for women writers. Jane must have read their work. In fact, several other women writers were so important to Jane that she mentioned them and hints about their work in her own novels. Yet they have faded into history. Jane Austen's Bookshelf investigates the disappearance of Austen's heroes. Each chapter profiles a different writer, including Frances Burney, Anne Radcliffe, Charlotte Lennox, and more. Romney recounts her experience reading them, finding rare copies of their works, and drawing on connections between their words and Austen's words. Rebecca collects hard copies of these books, physically recreating Austen's bookshelf. She makes a convincing case for why these books should be placed back on Austen lovers' shelves today. You can find an annotated list of titles in the appendix, and the notes section is glorious, and she even includes an index. Like every good nonfiction book.
All good. Jane Austen's bookshelf. Okay, Connie.
All right. I think that's interesting, Heather. I'm reading Anne Bronte's The Tenant of Wildfell Hall.
Yes.
And I know Amy's got a Bronte book to talk about. Anne Bronte, she definitely name drops books that she's reading.
Yes.
And I find that fascinating. So anyway. Yeah, I am a book nerd. I'm going to do my last one quickly because I want to hear about Amy's Bronte book. So,
yes.
Turning to Stone, Discovering the Subtle Wisdom of Rocks by Marcia Bjornerud. It is Earth Day. Happy Earth Day, everyone. So I brought a very earthy book. Yeah. So I'll just go through this one quickly. Bjornerud, she is a structural geologist. She currently teaches at Lawrence University in Wisconsin. And her book will open up just entire worlds of rocks to you. Maybe you didn't know that that was something that you needed in life, but trust me, there is much solace to be had in this book. She weaves personal stories in a way that makes the book very readable, while also taking you on a journey back into deep time via rocks like flint, sandstone, basalt, and granite. Her own life undergoes several seismic shifts along the way, and I think one of her genius moves is the way she's able to, as a writer, juxtapose the fleeting human time frame against these deep geological time frames. And it's just a wonderful book, and there's your Earth Day selection.
Turning to Stone, Discovering the Subtle Wisdom of Rocks. How cool. Amy.
Yeah, so thanks for setting this up. This recommendation is courtesy of our bookstore owner, Sharon, and I do think it'll pair really well with Jane Austen's bookshelf. It's 15 Wild Decembers by Karen Powell, a strange and beautiful immersion into the lives of Emily Bronte and her family. The Brontes lived in Yorkshire, England in the 1800s. There were five girls and one boy. Two of the girls died, actually, as a result of mistreatment at a horrific-sounding boarding school. And the remaining siblings would create complex, interwoven stories as children. The girls, of course, went on to write two of the most famous novels in English literature, Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights. This book covers the sad and disturbing lives of the family, each of whom, despite their immense talent, struggled to succeed in the outside world. The contrast between the challenging everyday details of living in an impoverished state and these individuals' complex, extraordinary inner lives is poignant and powerful. It's not necessary to read or reread the Brontes in order to enjoy 15 Wild Decembers, but this book does provide dimension and insight that makes each of their novels seem even more remarkable.
All right. The name of the book is 15 Wild Decembers. Is that right?
Yes.
By Karen Powell. Excellent. Very cool. All right.
Right. My last one is Who Ate Steve? By Susanna Lloyd and illustrated by Kate Hindley. This is a brightly colored picture book published by Nosy Crow. It's a book that teaches children about the concept of size. The character Steve is small and Marcel is large. Now, I can hear you now. Boring. But this one has employed a way to make learning especially entertaining. I will not give away the ending, but no worms or birds were harmed in the creation of this book. There may also be another larger animal involved in making sure that Marcel gets a taste of his own medicine. Who Ate Steve joins the great pantheon of read-aloud classics like The Monster at the end of this book. And another monster at the end of this book. Mm. Stories that are fun, interactive, extremely kid-friendly, and let the kids in on the joke. The preschool and grade school set will be screaming again to their storytellers. And here is the best part. It comes with a Stories Aloud QR code for the tech-savvy parent so they can use their phone for a free audio reading of the book. While we always encourage personal reading to your children, we know that literacy comes in many forms, and this may be useful, wink, wink, on the car ride in your future.
Very cool. Who Ate Steve? All right. Amy, we're out of time. I apologize. Oh, no. I'm sorry. Do we miss anything?
Oh, we have some cool events coming up, but I would say just look on our Instagram or go on our website to learn more about that, including an adult book fair at Ninepin Cider here in Albany.
That sounds fun. That sounds fun. When's that?
That is on Friday, May 2nd from 6 to 10 p.m.
Very good. Okay, so you can find out more information about these wonderful bookstores by going to battenkillbooks.com or chathambookstore.indielight.org. All the book picks listed online, WAMC.org/roundtable. Thanks to you both. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.